So, thanks everybody. Thanks for coming. It's getting late. It's been a long day of listening to people talk. So hopefully this will be a good one. We're up here in the clouds to talk about application lifecycle management in the clouds. So just so everyone has the right expectations, we're going to be talking about using Team Foundation Server in Azure, on the internet, in the clouds, to build software. We're not going to be spending much time today talking about actually building, you know, Azure applications and what you need to do to deploy your stuff to an extra small worker role and blah, blah, blah. That's other sessions today. So hopefully everybody's in the right session. Okay, let's get started. My name's Martin Woodward. That's what I look like, in case you forget. And that's how to get hold of me. If you need my email address or Twitter or whatever, do a podcast about TFS as well. That's fascinating if you want to learn even more about Team Foundation Server. So, Martin Woo at Microsoft.com. I work on Team Foundation Server in 2010. It's a product that comes in a box and only in a box. And in Team Foundation Server 11, it comes in a box, but it also comes in the cloud. So we're going to talk about that part of it. And I specialize on the Eclipse and cross-platform sides as well at Team Foundation Server. So, and I've written a couple of books about TFS and application lifecycle management. Soon to be out of date, but there you go. That's the life of an author. Never mind. I have to write some other ones. Okay. I live in Ireland. I work remote. This is the view from my office. I work in my house in the middle of rural Northern Ireland, in the middle of nowhere, in a field. With just sheep and my children for company. Not a lot of adult conversation goes on, apart from to myself and to Link, of course. Because the rest of my team, I do have a desk, and it's in the, see that little corner bit there? That's where my desk is, looking at this ship. That's the HMS Carolina. But you can see why I work from where I work from. There's not a lot else around my office in Belfast. That hole there, that impressive-looking hole, that's actually where they built the Titanic, believe it or not. So, don't let that worry you, of course. It was fine the last time we touched it, but yeah. Don't worry, yeah. Anyway, but that's good. So the rest of my team work in North Carolina, and they work in Redmond. We're spread out. And we have people in China, we have people in India, we have people all over the world working on Team Foundation Server. Which is great, because it means we've got 24/7 coverage of everything. You know, the sunlight never sets on Team Foundation Server. However, we've got this distributed team all over the world. And one of the things the cloud's really good at is connecting geographically dispersed people. One of the things Team Foundation Server is very good at is working over a wide area network, always has been. Reason being, half the team are in North Carolina, the other half are based across the whole, you know, length of the United States over here, and you wouldn't know it, but the connection between North Carolina and Redmond is actually really pretty bad. It's, you know, it could be a piece of wet string. It's the connection isn't great. And so when they were building Team Foundation Server, they never had a huge amount of bandwidth between them in North Carolina and their server, which sits up in Building 40, I think it is, in Redmond. So, so they just built it, so it works really well over, you know, low bandwidth connections. And it works really well. Link can have given up the ghost, email can have stopped working, and I generally can still carry on working with TFS, especially the source control sides and things like that, and, you know, saving work items, that sort of thing. So, pulling down a build takes a long time, though, you know, when the network's really slow, but I can check in and everything else. So we're going to talk about a thing we have out there today called tfspreview.com. Who's been to tfspreview.com before coming to this session? Fabulous. About a quarter of you, I would say. Great. Just seeing how many people got in the room. Great. Okay. Tfspreview.com is where we currently have a version of TFS that's running out there in the cloud. So you don't need to, if you want to try the very, very latest version of TFS, and I mean literally Less than, what day is it today? Less than 2 days old version of TFS. Go to tfspreview.com. We last did a push a few days ago. We do pushes every 3 weeks. We have 3 week sprints inside our team. We push to production at least every sprint. We quite often push sort of performance and bug fixes every week. And if things are really bad, we change things a couple of times a day. But we haven't done that for a while, fortunately. So I'll maybe tell you some of the stories as we go through. So we change it a lot. That's got the most active version of TFS Preview. We launched TFS Preview back at the Build conference last year. That was an interesting day, you know. Anyone who builds websites here? That's an interesting question. Yeah. Building websites is great. That day when you switch on the button and you're like, are people going to come? I want lots of people to come, but I don't want too many people to come at once because I've kind of tested my code. We've run a bunch of load tests against it. But every time, and a good rule of thumb, is every time you increase the traffic to your site by a factor of 10, things happen you didn't expect. It's impossible to model real production usage in a system. You can load up the system to the loads you expect to see, but people always use the system differently to how you expect them to use it. A classic example with websites, which I'm sure everyone's familiar with websites, is you do a load test. The load test will load, you know, try and request a resource from a website and then tell you how long it takes for that resource to come back and give you a result back. And you go, oh, yeah, great. And get to 100,000 users before I get a load of a response time less than 2 seconds or something. Brilliant load test. Production users don't work like that. If something happens when they press a button, they go, click, click, and send a bunch more requests in. And that completely blows all your modeling out that you've been doing of your load test data. They generate more load than you expect. And that's just one example. They do all the strange things that you're never expecting. So no place like production. So it was quite an interesting day. I was actually part of the team that's Jason Zander. Well, this is a photo I took at 7:45 on the 14th of September. A bit blurry, because I've been up a long time by this time. And, you know, this is taken from my Windows phone here. And this is me sat watching Jason Zander's keynote being streamed live. I told you I was a cross-platform guy. That's streaming live onto my MacBook on one laptop, waiting for the announcement. I'm on the phone with somebody. We've got a big conference line going. It's like, you know, launching Apollo sort of thing, you know. It's a conference, open conference circuit with everybody on. We've got somebody sat in the audience, a couple of people sat backstage, and we've got everyone in the operations centers, everyone back at the, you know, the development offices, all ready to see what's going to happen when we switch this thing on and let people in. Because we weren't, you know, we had a good idea, but we wanted to make sure it all worked okay. So, and you can see here, it is we have a little dashboard. It's a bit blurry, but we have a dashboard that runs, which gives statistics of how the service is running. It doesn't tell us any data about what individuals are doing. It tells us things like how many users are currently active in the system, you know, what the CPU load is, what the disk size is, who's got the biggest, you know, what the biggest database is, and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't tell us about individual activity, which we'll talk about in a minute. So there's our thing, and you can see here, this little line here is actually the, this flat line is the number of active users, and I think that actual line was the number of accounts on the system. We've been testing this for, you know, a while internally. My team personally, were dog fooding it. Our source code, our work items, our build, our tests, they're all stored in TFS Preview, along with everybody else's stuff. You know, we use it ourselves. So, yeah, the system had been fairly static on the number of users, actually live, you know, what does it say, 1,259 at that point in time, and which is, you know, not a lot. And so, nice flat line. The second he did it and gave everybody out an invite code, so they all had in their packs, you know, the build people, they're lucky they get, like, tablet machines and all sorts of freebies with them, you know, we don't get that here, unfortunately. But, and the speakers didn't get any of that either, which was good. They all got in their packs an invite code, and you know, the minute they were like, oh, the website got switched on. That was about number three on my list, was switch on the shortcut code for the website, switch that on. People could start coming into the site, and we watched the, you know, the traffic just fly up, and it's carried on growing exponentially ever since. We're using an invite code mechanism to allow people into TFS Preview. It's a preview. It's in the name. We're learning. And we use the invite codes as a way of controlling the growth, so we can predict when those 10 times, you know, growth parts are going to happen and control those. And rather than going from 10 times growth to 1,000 times growth, you know, we can predict. So that's what we use invite codes for, to constrain the growth so we can predict it. And yeah, it's just carried on growing and growing. It's pretty good fun to be with. Well, that's my little checklist. And then, you know, the final bit was have a drink. So that's what I did. Which I always like doing on conference calls to America, because they tend to try and keep me up very late. Because, you know, for them, it's sort of lunchtime. For me, it's tea time. My kids have gone to bed already. So I occasionally crack open a Heineken or whatever and sit there and toast them over my conference. So, okay. Why the cloud for application lifecycle management? Well, the killer feature for the cloud, and one of the reasons why we wanted to introduce it, is it's a great getting started experience. You don't need to buy a server. You don't need to install anything. You just go to a website and get started. You just click on a link inside Visual Studio, and you're in TFS. That's brilliant. The number one support area with Team Foundation Server is installing TFS. So we need to reduce that. This is one of the ways. Anyone install TFS 2005 here? Whoa, I can tell. You've been there. Yeah. You people who install TFS 2010, you don't know how easy you've got. You know, you can install it in 20 minutes now with a little GUI. With TFS 2005, man, that was hard work. I remember I had to rebuild a machine like three or four times. If I got it wrong, we had a checklist eventually. We had a checklist to follow. And then you got through to the point of checklist. If you made one mistake, you basically just had to repave your box and start again, because, you know, it was pretty hard work. Nowadays, you have a little GUI. You can install TFS in about 20 minutes using a basic installation TFS, you know, if you just want it installed on, say, a laptop or something. But still, 20 minutes is too long. And you have to download and install the bits, and it's just friction. You don't need it. Okay, another reason why the cloud experience is really good is obviously you've got people all over the world accessing your server. They might be in different organizations. They might be in branch offices without good network connections over your VPN or your wired area network. But we've actually got a pretty decent local internet connection. That's fairly common now. That the VPN connection is slow, but the internet connection is still normally quite fast, especially with 3G expanding out into all sorts of places and good DSL links and things. And also, we're finding more and more organizations, especially in this economy, are merging quickly. And more organizations are outsourcing work. And so having a solution that's just out there in the internet for you is really good for those people. Now, obviously, sometimes you need TFS. You need it in your organization. You might legally have to keep your work items and your source code and your build, you know, everything, data about your stuff. You might have legally be required to keep it inside the premises or inside the country. And in those cases, the same product we're shipping, TFS server, you know, we're iterating this really fast at the moment to, you know, on the preview. When we get to the point where we release that, where we release TFS, it's the same code. We just take a copy, put it in the box and ship it and let people use it. So we're getting the value of all this feedback on the preview is making the box product better, but it is the same code. So if the cloud isn't suitable for you, you still have the on-premise alternative. And so, you know, it's still the same product. It's not different. It's the same code. Right. Yeah, obviously your operational costs, you know, we get the benefits of scale of Azure. We don't have to stand up servers, we don't have to have people running them. It all comes as part of our COGS, our cost of goods. You know, the charges we pay for our instances in Azure and our SQL Azure usage and our bandwidth usage and all that sort of thing. So your operational costs, well, in the preview, they're zero because the preview's free. But when we go to a commercial service, the cost of running the service is wrapped up in this monthly subscription fee or whatever the billing model is that we end up going with. We haven't decided yet. And I know it's going to be a question. We'll get to that, and I'll say that. We haven't decided yet. So, so the billing. And you, operationally, you just don't have to run a server. It just runs. Backups just happen. Availability just happens. You get benefits of scale. I mentioned the delivery cycle one already. We rev this thing every 3 weeks. It's not always a big change. Like, I couldn't even tell you what had changed last week, you know. I think it might have been some performance stuff and some monitoring features that we added in. It wasn't anything particularly you would notice as an end user, you know. The release before that, say, what would that have been? Sometime, yeah, like end of January, beginning of February. The release before that, that enabled, one of the features it enabled was you can now do Control S on a work item in the web, and it saves the work item. You know, woo, that's great. I'd love that feature personally. Mostly, it'll just mean that now when somebody hits Control S, they go, "Ooh, that's good. I didn't know that was there." You know, whereas before they would get a browser save dialog pop up. So it's slower. You know, it's incremental improvements. Occasionally, though, we do have a big release phase that comes in at Christmas. We introduced a big there was a big revamp to the UI that came in, and it was very noticeable. But those sorts of changes are not frequent. You know. Most of the time, it's just incremental improvements, performance improvements, bug fixes, little things that improve. But they build up. And then we've got a bunch of things we want to do in the future. We can see a bunch of areas where we can really improve the flow of value from your customers through to your business to the products you give them by giving you public-facing services and servers that you can use. So we're not really, you know, we've not really gone down that detail. We just know that public-facing services and servers and resources are going to be things we're going to want to invest in the future. So we're getting cloud in place to help provide some of those services. Also, it helps with connectivity between other services out there in the cloud. And we've done some work recently. Actually, that might have gone in this release that just went up around OAuth to enable sites to be securely connected into TFS in the cloud. But anyway, so public facing is good for a bunch of reasons, but you don't have to have it. It's all about choice. Yeah, you can have on premise, you can have it in the cloud, and we're not the only people that host TFS. We have our big deployment in the cloud that's for everyone. But today, if you go to AKAMS WAC TFS hosting, there are a bunch of people out there today who do Team Foundation server hosting based on 2010. And I'm sure we'll be doing Team Foundation server hosting based on TFS 11 when it's available. Why would you want to go to another third-party provider when you can buy direct from us? Well, these guys don't typically just sell you hosting of TFS. They can also customize TFS to how you want it to be. They can give you a much more customized, tailored to your experience version of TFS. They can also provide you some best practice consultancy. So, you know, ALM isn't like there's TFS and the tools. You give a bunch of developers tools and stuff, they're not instantly going to get better. You need to, you know, change your workflows and encourage your organization to work in more efficient ways, and tooling only helps a little bit with that. It's all about process change and driving process change as well. And these guys are experts at implementing process change in your organization and giving you some Team Foundation services to do with that process change. Okay. So I mentioned it's the same product, but there are some differences between Team Foundation server and Team Foundation service, the service in the cloud. The biggest one and the biggest pain point for us is there currently isn't, you know, TFS internally. So TFS stores all your work item tracking, your builds, your source control. It stores it all in one database. And then on premise, inside your company, when you install it from the box, It also creates a data warehouse on top of all that data. So you're busy putting stuff in, all this data is getting captured about you. We build a data warehouse on top of it, and then we provide you with a bunch of SQL reports, SQL services reports, on top of that data warehouse. That's a hugely powerful feature of TFS, because it's just so much data in there that we can surface in lots of great ways to help you improve your processes. The problem is SQL Server reporting services today isn't cloud ready, isn't, you know, ready to go out into Azure. So we don't currently have a reporting solution. We have some reports. We have reports that are built into Excel and that are driven directly through the Excel integration that we have. We also have put some reports into the web, which I'll show you, which we've kind of hard-coded in. But for now, there's no flexible reporting solution running out in the cloud that just talks to your TFS server. We want to fix that, but that's where we are right now. SharePoint TFS on-premise, you install it, it'll install SharePoint services for you if you want it to. When you create a new team project, it'll create a SharePoint portal for you as well, if you want it to. We don't do that in the cloud. We do what's the equivalent to a basic TFS installation. You can point a team project at a SharePoint server that lives somewhere else if you want to, but it doesn't come integrated with SharePoint out in the cloud. So you can, once you've created your TFS project, you can point it to your SharePoint instance wherever that is, you know, on-premise, access over the internet, Office 365, wherever you want it to be, you can point it to it, but it's not integrated into TFS yet. And then finally as well, virtual lab and test management. We'd love that to be in the cloud at some point. It's not there yet. So, you know, you can imagine the cloud things you could do with lab and test management with, you know, all these boxes that you don't need to buy anymore. You can imagine there's lots of exciting things we want to do there. They're not there today. So, yep. The things that aren't in the service are this, you know, it's so much easier to collaborate, we've already talked about, and it's so much easier, well, it's practically zero setup time. It's a preview. So these are the rules of Fight Club. First of all, you know, nobody, don't tell anybody about the rules of Fight Club. Second of all, we're providing the service currently for free. The reason why we're providing it for free is you're providing us with a huge amount of value in terms of feedback. And I don't just mean like explicit feedback, you know, click it, there's like support links and email links in the site so you can send us suggestions and comments and bug reports and you can go to the forums and ask questions. There's all that usual type of feedback which we already get from when we roll out a test version of Team Foundation Server. The problem, as I've already said, and we all agree with, there's no place like production, you know. Until you're running Team Foundation Server with your real projects, there's a whole class of issues we never, ever hear about. And there's only some issues that we hear about that we can fix if we can identify the bug. When we're running the server, we get to see what, you know, we get to see the performance of all the stored procedures. We get to see the network utilization between the database tier and the application tier and blah, blah, blah. We get to fix a bunch of stuff. We get a lot of feedback from you without you having to explicitly give us feedback. We get to see the service and improve it and make the final shipping boxed product of TFS so much better and so much more road proven than it's ever been before because we've had all this test. It's basically, for us, it's free testing. For you, it's a free service. It's a win-win. That's why it's free. You can go live with a Team Foundation service preview. By that, we mean we support it fully for you to put in your live data, your work items. We're behind the service. We're backing it up. We're trying to keep it up as much as we can, availability as high as we can. Our goal is 100% availability. When we ship our target SLA is 99.9%. But that's like SLAs, that's just legal wording, you know. If we get below the SLA, then we pay you money back. It's not a goal. The goal is 100%. You're never going to get to your goal, but there's an English phrase, that a man's goal should exceed his grasp or what's a heaven for. So, you know, we're just aiming high. So aiming for 100%. Support is currently via the forums. You can't, you know, ring a phone number and get through to support for the Team Foundation service. It's through the forums or through email, standard support mechanisms. But you'll find the people there are incredibly responsive. So we brought on a bunch of support people to support the service. As far as I can tell, there's been a lot of Facebook status updates from them because we've not had as much support as we thought we might have had because people just know how to use it because it's just Team Foundation Server. It's just in the cloud. So, you know, it's easy. Plus, obviously, with it being called Preview, you get a certain, you know, it raises the bar of the kind of people that come in. So these are kind of people that just want to, you know, oh, let's go for it. So it's good. You're basically you people. So and then we're upgrading this server all the time with new features. We're upgrading your data automatically as well. You know, we're updating the SQL databases behind these, the add-in features over time. We automatically do that. Don't worry about that. And we don't guarantee an SLA for uptime, but our best efforts. I think we're averaging about 99.33 at the minute. We'd like it to be 99.99, you know, 100%. 99.9 is going to be the SLA when we ship. We will charge in the future. We have no idea what that charging is going to be. So it will be competitive, is what I'm told. Yeah, that's not helpful to me. But we're going to charge for it some way. There'll be a mix of offerings, I'm sure. You know, Microsoft are not in the game of producing tools that cost more than everybody else. We try and do things that are priced competitively for the market, for the value of the services you're getting. So I'm hoping the charging will be good. I'm hoping the charging model will be something that's understandable. It definitely won't be how much bandwidth you use and what your cogs are, because you can't control that. You know, it's more likely to be like accounts or users or something like that that you can control, you know? So, yeah. One of the first questions your colleagues will ask you when you say, hey, I want to move us to the cloud, is what about security? You know, this is a bit scary now, moving all your family jewels, your source code into the cloud. So, again, we're Microsoft. We have a lot of experience of being a target for security, so which is good because it means we have a lot of experts inside Microsoft who know a lot about security. Apart from the security of the site itself, authentication to the service is controlled by ACS. Have you heard of ACS? It's an Azure service for authentication. That allows federated internet identities. So at the moment, we have Live ID enabled. That's the one we're using. That's the one that's going to be available for a while now. But on our backlog, so in these slides, the grey, the bold colour, is stuff that's there right now. And then blue, the lighter colour, is stuff that we're aiming for in the future. So just so you understand. So, and I've got a little key here, look. Today, future. But because these slides are so pretty, it's really hard to see that. So anyway. So, yeah. Live ID is there today. We obviously want to do things like ADFS, so you can federate your domain credentials into the cloud. That works today, actually, if you know how to set it up, because I have it enabled for our internal account, but it's via a special hack that we haven't enabled on everybody's yet. When we get it into a state that we can support it and make it easy for you to do, well, as easy as ADFS can be to do, then we'll make that available. And then things like OAuth, you know, Facebook Connect can even be enabled, Google IDs, whatever. Whenever we add one of these additional authentication mechanisms past Live ID, we will make sure you are in control as to which ones you trust. You know, if you don't want to trust somebody's Facebook Connect, like me button, whatever, you don't have to trust that. You control which authentication provider you trust. The key is we don't control your, you know, we are not yet another authentication provider on the web. There are plenty of others. So go use one of those or use your own with ADFS. Everything's obviously point-to-point encrypted with HTTPS. There's no way to get into the site without first being bounced onto HTTPS. So, you know, that takes care of that. And the data storage is stored in SQL Azure and stored on disks in the Azure data centers, which if you've ever tried to get into an Azure data center, you know is not easy. There's one in Ireland, and first of all, you wouldn't know where it is because it's completely anonymous. Second, there is armed security. There is, you know, very, very, as a Microsoft employee, I cannot get in without special invitations and permissions and things and talking to the right people. And even then, I'm escorted round. You know, physical security is kept very, very high on these places, mainly because there's thousands and thousands and millions of pounds of Microsoft's own hardware in, as well as your customer data. You know, it's a secure place. Also, the credentials, you know, for connecting to those databases, I can't get to those credentials as a program manager inside Microsoft. You, as a user of the service, can't get access to those credentials either. It's between the application tier and the database tier. There are, however, and there has to be, some people who be able to get in and see some of that data if they need to, if you ask them to, because there's a customer problem. There are a total in the entire organization of Microsoft, 4 people who can access that data. I know them all. They're good guys. In fact, I know they're good guys because they've had background checks done on them. And they regularly have background checks on them. You know, they take personal data very, very seriously. All access to that data is audited, so on and so forth. So, yeah, they take data storage very seriously. Currently, today, the Team Foundation server is actually the main service. It's located in a data center near Chicago somewhere, I'm told. Again, I don't know the exact location. They keep it kind of a secret. But it's in the central US data center. That's today in the preview. In the future, when we release properly, you'll be able to pick where you want your account data to be stored. So, for example, there are a few companies in Europe who have to have their data stored in Europe because they do, because of privacy rules maybe. Or, I mean, the privacy one's an interesting one because it's source code, work item tracking. So it depends. You probably don't want to be checking in customer data into your source code repository anyway. If you are doing that, that's probably not a good thing. But anyway, some people want to keep their source code in Europe. Some people have legal requirements to keep source code in a particular country or whatever. We're going to have the ability, as we can, within Azure. You know, in Azure, you can pick which data center things are located in. We're going to enable that for your account. But that's in the future. To begin with, it's in America, in Chicago. Now, the thing you might worry is about the performance of that. Another reason for locating it closer to you is performance. You know, you don't have to go all the way over the Atlantic to pull down your data. We originally thought this was going to be a problem, you know, performance around the world. We found the bandwidth that goes into these data centers for Azure is just phenomenal. It's just amazing. Whenever I try and download data from Azure from my home 8-meg home DSL connection, I can saturate that DSL connection quite easily, you know, from Ireland, from my field in Ireland. So it's impressive, the data center bandwidth. It's pretty amazing. Now, it's pretty amazing. In fact, I much prefer using, I tell them they'll take Team Foundation service away from me because I use it every day. From my cold dead hands is what I said in an email, because it's so much faster for me to use the cloud service than it was for me to go through our VPN connection, which gets routed down to Dublin and then across to Seattle and then back from Seattle down to blah, blah, blah. It's just great. Internet's brilliant. And that's the experience we found from all our customers around the world using it. People wouldn't know it was in America. And then TFS was developed from the beginning for WAN, as I've mentioned. We do have extensive testing, but as we learnt, there is no place like production. You know, when we switched that service on, had our first 10-factor increase in traffic, things happened we weren't expecting. The system is not today performing at the levels we want it to perform. It performs fine, we're going to use it, but we want it to be a lot, lot faster. And so, a lot faster, I would say, not a lot, lot. So, just watching the way people use the system and the way you do optimizations for when you're scaling to tens of thousands and thousands, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of users, it just gives interesting little optimizations that you do. Okay, SLA, we mentioned, best effort. Redundancy, this is the great thing. Well, we've got Azure provides us with a bunch of services for redundancy. The interesting thing, it's the same code that's in our, you know, it's on-premise versus versus the cloud. But if you had a single TFS box that's, you know, where the database and the application tier are all sat on the same machine, no load balancer in front, and a perfect internet, a perfect connection, you know, in your network, you basically plug your laptop straight into the TFS server, then there's a bunch of code there that never, ever, ever gets exercised, because we now have a lot of code in to handle redundancy. As you're saying, as a cloud application, you have to be conscious of is the fact that your data tier can drop offline and move over somewhere else on you mid-transaction. Or, you know, you get load balance from one web server to another and you have to get the data connection through. There's just a bunch of stuff you have to build with redundancy in mind. There's no way you can cost-effectively get to 99.9 recurring percent uptime, like second, you know, minutes and seconds a day uptime of outages a day, without by making a single server that reliable. Machines just are never that perfect. Data centers just aren't that perfect. If you, a data center will only guarantee you, say, two nines availability, maybe three. How do you get an extra? Those extra level nines of availability is by having more than one data center. And so you've got to always rely on this redundancy to get high availability. It's a trade-off. So we've got to build in a bunch of redundancy. There is a bunch there for us for free from Azure and from SQL Azure, and there's also a bunch of code we added. We actually added a lot of it in TFS 2010 because we scaled out TFS 2010 to enable you to have lots of boxes and stuff. We scaled a lot of that stuff in then, and we added a bit more this time around in TFS 11. The monitoring of the service, we have there's a server provider out there called Gomez we use to monitor the server from outside in, from, you know, lots of different places around the world. That gives us a good idea of what the experience is like, say, you know, here in The Hague or in Ireland or whatever. It allows us to see around the world what our customers' perception is of the experience. A problem with that is there's a lot of things there we can't control. If a trawler goes and rips up the fiber optic cable between here and America, then, you know, we have little control over that and there's little we can do to fix it. So what we do a lot more of is the inside the data center, we call it synthetic transactions, inside the data center, pinging different machines and different uptime and, you know, just seeing what's happening inside our data center. So we can, that is the stuff we can fix. But we also like to know what the experience is like from the outside in as well. Because again, like switching on compression. When we switch on compression, that increases, say, CPU load a little bit, not a lot. But it vastly improves the average experience outside. Doing a change to the source code so that it loads resources in a particular way vastly improves the experience end users have distributed. But isn't an inside the data center fix. So you've got to balance both when you're building a cloud application. How do you get your data in and how do you get your data out? So today, basically, the only option that's in black there is start afresh with the service. So create an account, check in some code, add some work items, maybe use the Excel integration to export some data out of another system you've got, and then use the Excel integration, which also talks to TFS in the cloud, obviously, to put that data in, you know, globally import stuff, but you start afresshoon, i.e., you know, sometime this year, we're going to be having, there's a thing called a TFS integration platform. Anyone heard of that before? Okay, a few nods. It's basically a service which allows you to connect, you know, synchronize two Team Foundation servers together and copy data from one to the other and synchronize. So we're going to enable that to work against hosted TFS. It actually kind of works today. A few people actually in the Netherlands already are using TFS service and have already hacked this integration platform together themselves to do that. We don't support it today. In fact, my team does that, believe it or not, because we needed a backup somewhere else to give some data to somebody else. So, that's not supported. It will be at some point soon, and we'll have all that, and it'd be quite easy to do. And that'll help you migrate data from an internal system over to your TFS preview, if you have one. However, as important as getting the data in is getting the data out again, if you want to take the data from us and go with a third-party TFS hoster, or go with an on-premise TFS, or take your TFS on-premise data and just just drop it into TFS in the cloud. So that's one of the things that we want to enable and that we will enable before we introduce pricing into Team Foundation service, before we start charging for it. We will give you a way of getting your data out and putting it into an on-premise instance of TFS if you prefer. So that's good. And that's on the backlog, that feature's below, is like introduce billing into the system. There's all these features you have to build, and then there's, get the data out, and so we've got a little way before we get there, unfortunately, but we'll get there eventually. But in the meantime, we get lots of lovely feedback, so we're happy and you're happy, so that's good. A couple of other things. I mentioned this already, but who was on TFS 2008? Quick raise of hands, a few people. Who upgraded from TFS 2008 to TFS 2010? Few people, yeah. When you do that upgrade from TFS 2008 to TFS 2010, the upgrade was fine, just upgraded. You go and talk to your server, it's exactly the same server you were talking to. It feels like the same server you were talking to back in 2008. That's because all the process template, the thing which controls the processes, what states, what work items are there, well, they're controlled by the data in your instance of TFS. So on-premise, after you've done an upgrade, you have to then do some what we call feature enablement. And in 2008, 2010, it was a manual process to enable features like test case management and, other states and the work items and things. That's because we let you customize your process completely. You can have whatever kind of process you want with Team Foundation Server. You can just customize the heck out of it. So it makes it very hard for us to upgrade somebody's process from one thing to another without breaking something. So that's why we did that. In the Team Foundation service, we want to upgrade your process templates as we go along, so that when we ship TFS 11, the process templates you have on the service will be the same process templates as if you got installed TFS out of the box. So we want to keep upgrading you. So to keep upgrading you and make it easy for us, we've switched off the ability for you to be able to customize your process template inside of a Team Foundation service. So you basically get to pick one of the three: Scrum, Agile, or CMMI. Yeah? And then you get your process template automatically gets upgraded. Unless you've got, super secret privileges to the account and we enable a feature which lets you change your process template, in which case it doesn't. And I have that enabled on one of my accounts, and you'll see why you don't want that enabled on yours in a minute. So I'll show you that later on. So we upgrade you. At some point when we go live, we're going to also make it so you can opt. There's a bunch of tenants you have to go through as a cloud service in Microsoft. One of them is the ability for you to be able to delay upgrades as an end user. Maybe you're not ready for the magical unicorn feature to be added to every page. And so you disable that, you opt out of that upgrade for this pass. And we have to enable things like that in the future. It's not there now. When we get to the final release and we start charging, this will be notified well in advance, when we do know when we're going to charge and what the charging model is going to be. You will know as soon as we do. And when we eventually make that conversion, your account will get converted to a trial account on this new paid-for service. And then you'll have, 30, 60 days, whatever the trial period is, to either decide you want to go with the service or, take your data out and pull it on-premise. But that's why we need to have that data export story finished before we can start charging for the service. And then basically anything that can talk to TFS 11 can talk to the hosted service. It is TFS 11. It's a TFS 11 build less than a few days old. So Visual Studio 11 obviously can, Eclipse can through Team Explorer Everywhere, Test Manager, Excel, Project, VB6, CAN, via the MISCI provider, you know, Toad, Fox Pro, you know, you name it. MATLAB, MATLAB can talk to Team Foundation Server if you're doing any statistical analysis. Anything can talk to TFS 11 can talk to the hosted service. There's very little we actually had to change in the protocol to enable the hosted service. The main thing is authentication. We had to change authentication to enable these federated authentication. So it pops up a browser, you log in, the browser goes, you log in. And then Visual Studio 2008 and 2010, forward compatibility patches to talk through, and 2005, sorry, as well. Missing from the side. Okay, let's have a play with it, shall we? Enough talk, I think. Yeah. So, the website you go to is, not Bing, but that looks quite cloudy. Look at that, isn't that appropriate? Let's make this full screen, F11, and we'll just have a bit of a play. Okay, so the website address you want to go to is tfspreview.com. There we go. So, that's that URL one more time, tfspreview.com. And here's where I see what the internet connection's like in the room. Phew, not too bad. Now, at the moment, we've deliberately kept this very blank. You know, you can click on the little play button and watch a video about what the service is, but it's a preview. You know, it's not all the marketing, blah, 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 that you'll see when we start going into production. It's a preview. So what you do is to come down here and hit the Create Account button. So you do that, and a normal person, when they come in, let's see. Well, okay, the internet's been reset. Okay, so identity provider, live ID. I mentioned when we have more identity providers, you get to pick which ones you want to use, that sort of thing. And then you get to create a URL. So what do you want your account to be? At the moment, it has to be something on tfspreview.com, you know, star.tfspreview.com. That's because we provide, we have a wildcard HTTPS certificate we use that we can enable so that you can connect to your TFS server using HTTPS for free. However, we do want to enable you to have your own vanity URLs, like tfs.mycompany.com. To do that, we're going to have to build a bunch of certificate upload logic as well, so you can upload your own HTTPS certificates and blah, blah, blah. But for now, you just get one of ours that we let you have. So let's create a server URL. So, Tech Days are now. There you go. I'm not particularly inspired. Hopefully, nobody else has grabbed that one yet. We'll find out in a second. Then you type your invitation code. If you don't have an invitation code, you can click there to go and ask for one. Or, if you're somebody in this room and don't tell anyone, you can type Tech Days in. And that'll give you, I'll set it for 80. That'll give you 80 people can come in and get registered with this code. So you can go away now and quickly register if you can. Don't tell anyone else. Okay, there we go. Hit create account. And don't tweet it either, because otherwise it'll all go for everyone. Okay, Tech Days. Right, let's create an account. Hopefully that code still works. We created it last night, so we'll see. What this is going to do now is do the equivalent of buy a TFS, buy a piece of hardware. Oh, no, it won't. I've got to log in first. I told it I want to use live ID. So I'll use Martin at woodwardweb.com and a password. Apologies. I can't actually talk and type a password at the same time. It's just a thing. It's impossible for me to do. Exactly, without spitting out my password. Now that's just random characters. It's not an interesting conversation. So, yeah. Anyway, okay. So what it's going to do now is it's going to create... Oh, no. You know that uptime I was talking about? Oh, no. I do have a TFS server locally that I can show you the experience against, but I didn't want to do that. Tech Days. NL. Days. Oh no, don't be doing this, Timmy. Oh, it's already gone. Great. Tech Days at L2. There we go. Oh no. We'll come back to this towards the end of my demo. Wow, that's never ever happened in the history of the service. Fabulous. Okay. Okay. So I have locally a TFS server I prepared earlier. So what I wanted to do was show you what actually happened when you got onto the account, but I can't. Oh man. That's going to work before we leave this building. Otherwise, I'm not leaving. How long we got left? 28 minutes, 30 seconds. Okay. So when you have an account on TFS service and you have set up a team, this is what it looks like. It looks pretty, doesn't it? Let's actually, I'll tell you what we will do. Let's go, wow. That really messes up my demo. Okay, let's show you around. So the first thing you'll notice is, and again, this is now I'm showing you a build of TFS that's also a few days old. So again, this is hot off the press, new stuff. This is the same version that's running out in the cloud. The first thing you'll notice here is you have things like, you mentioned we don't have SQL Server reporting services, so we built a bunch of reporting features into the web. For instance, a burndown chart, some sprint reporting to see how you're doing. We also have this really neat feature here to do with team favorites. So you can go in and do any work item query and pin it and I'm just thinking about something else as well. While we're doing that, another backup that I'm going to quickly try. Let's try my own personal TFS preview account and see if it's up. Maybe it's just account creation that's broke. Because you know I talked about redundancy. Well, So we have a thing called, Netflix are great. They have a script called Chaos Monkey, which goes and randomly switch parts of their live site off. Netflix is like the US streaming, movie streaming service. It randomly switches parts of their site off, just completely randomly, when they're doing some testing. And that enables them to test their failover experience. So it looks like something in the account creation was down. However, the rest of the service doesn't all fall over, hopefully, when account creation had gone down. You know what I mean? It only takes out part of the service if a little bit goes down, not everything. So as a user of TFS, I wouldn't even know that account creation was broke, which is good. So I'm going to come in here, and I'm going to create a new project. So when you first come in, you get a URL here, which is the URL you share with your team to connect in. Try not to forget that. We get a lot. Our biggest current support thing is, what's my URL to TFS Preview? I've forgotten. So we're going to build that self-service soon. So, currently, that's our biggest support thing. Let me make the size a bit bigger, actually. Zoom in a bit so you can see. That scaled interestingly. Let me not do that. Okay. I'll just zoom in using Zoom instead. Okay, so. So you have, URL, create a team project, or download the software. If you have TFS, Visual Studio 2010 today, with Service Pack 1, you need to install the software. Yes, sir? Is it? Brilliant. There we go. Told you it stays up. Oi, there we go. It's because you were all doing it at the same time. I told you the service is reliable. There you go. It was only out for 3 minutes, that particular bit there. There we go. Phew. Yeah. So I'm going to create an account at the same time. I wonder if it's because I used that live ID to create an account. There you go. Let's try again. Did you grab Tech Days or did you grab your own? Tech Days NL3. Tech Days. Sorry, I've just used it. There's now 73 accounts or whatever. Works on your machine. I need to use a different live ID, I think. No, I'm going to show you this. It does work. He shows you. I'm going to come in and use a different live ID. It worked for me this morning. Maybe it doesn't like me for some reason because I've created too many accounts using my ID or something like that. Okay. Download the software. So if you click on that link, it'll actually, let me just do that in a new tab. It'll actually give you a link currently to a blog post I wrote about how to get hold of a software. You remember I had that checklist in front of me? Like item 6 or 7 was publish this post, and you can see There you go. So that's when I got down to that one on the 14th of September. So, and here's how you download the bit. You need Service Pack 1 of Visual Studio installed first, and then you install this patch here for forward compatibility with TFS 11. And that gives you forward compatibility with all TFS 11, regardless of in the cloud or your on-premise. Big drink. Okay. And then, obviously, if you want to connect to Eclipse, we provide a full Eclipse integration. Very good. I work on it. So, you know, it's as good as the guy who can't even get an account created can do. Well, there you go. Blah, blah, blah. Right, fantastic. Right, and let's go back to this. Okay. So, download the software. And you see this here? That Tech Days code that I told you about, that's so you can get an account. You don't need that code to be able to be a member of a team. That allows you to create a new account and a new project. And for each account, you can have, you know, I don't think there's a limit, a lot of projects. And then you can also, if you have customers who you would like to use TFS Preview as well, you can see this handy, easy to recite GUID we have down here. You can just ring them up on the phone and say, hey, Johnny, type in E7A2F66, or copy-paste it into an email, perhaps. And they can also create their own account. But you don't need an account. Let's create a team project, first of all. So you come in, create a project of Tech Days, and a description, created live in NL when I had a bad demo failure, because I'll never forget this day. Okay, hit create project. I'm going to pick the Scrum process template. Notice it says preview free, because that's the version of the Scrum template we've currently got installed on there. I'm going to create a team project now, and this is a new team project for us all to go work in here today. So this is doing exactly the same stuff that it does on-premise. So it goes, it creates a new area in the schema in the database to associate this team project to, and does a bunch of stuff. This can, when the server's having a good day, you know, it takes seconds. When the server's having an interesting day, it can take a minute or so, so we'll see how long it's going to take. But the good news is you don't have to wait for that to finish before you hit, you can just, oh no, here we go, it's doing something. It's completely asynchronous, so you can come back to it at any time if you want to. In fact, why didn't I do that? So I'll leave that running. You can hit close and come back to it, but I'm just going to go back to martin.tfspreview.com, and I'm going to go play in another team project. Let's play in the Fabricam one. Or personal. Let's play in Fabricam, because this is basically now a completely empty project, completely as you would, you know, expect to see it. So the first thing I'm going to go into do here is manage my profile. So you see it says I'm Martin Woodward, and it's got a little picture here, but, you know, it's basically the standard picture you see in every Microsoft product when you don't have a picture yet. The rumor is that's an outline of a young Bill Gates taken from his original ID badge, by the way, if you've ever wondered what that picture is in Outlook, but I don't know. So what I'm going to do is change that and customize it a bit. So I'm going to click on there, and I'm going to manage profile. Now, remember in anyone using TFS today, when people change their display names, that can cause you issues, you know, if you change like network credentials and all sorts of things. We did a bunch of work to make that better. So I can come in here, I can change my display name to be something more useful, like Martin Woodward, and I can change my picture and load a picture up that I've got locally. Here you go. I'm getting back on the script now, the demo script, by the way, as you might be able to tell. A bit more confident. Okay, there we go. Here's my picture locally. Lovely. Hit save changes. And please. Did I do that right? What's going on today? Browse. Wow. And just see what happens. Yeah, I'm having such a lucky day today. But for the people using it on their laptops and on the phones, it's all working great, isn't it? It's just me in particular that's having trouble. Oh, there we go, it worked anyway. There we are. Yeah, there we are. I think it just doesn't like my ID or something. So let's just hit refresh on this page and see what happens. I'm just making sure everything's all right. It was working. But yeah, okay. Right then, so it's got me, it's got my picture, golden, everything's good. Now what I want to do is I want to add some team members in. I don't need to give them one of these crazy invite codes. I just go to manage members and I can add anyone in I want. So as I'm feeling so lucky, let's just let's try and get fired and we'll add Bill G, Microsoft.com, save changes. And we'll also add, I'll add somebody into my account. So you'll notice when I come in, it says Bill G at Microsoft.com. Funny enough, Bill's a bit busy saving the world and Africa and doing all that lovely, great stuff he does now. He hasn't logged on to my TFS preview account, so I'm not that insulted by it. But that's why it currently says his display name is Bill G at Microsoft.com. It's waiting for somebody to log in to the server using an identity service that I've said I trust, i.e. Live ID, that claims he has the email address BillG at Microsoft.com or the identity of BillG at Microsoft.com. So that's why it's important that we control which identity providers you trust. You know, you tell us which ones you trust. So, yeah, you can. Yeah, you would enter somebody's Live ID. But you, like mine, Live ID is Martin at Woodward Web. You know, that's why I've registered as Live ID. It doesn't have to be at live.com. It has to be their Live ID. Okay. Yep. For if you want to use, because we only support Live today to be able to log in, so it has to be a valid Live ID.
If you just type in somebody's email address,
then they need to create a Live ID with that email address, yeah, before they can log in, because they'll get the Live ID box pop up and it'll say log in, and then they'll try it and they won't have a Live ID. So what I will do is add a user that has logged into my account, Brian Harry, who's my boss's boss. And there we go. And again, things are, there we go. Added him in. And his picture's taking a while to load. There we go. Look at that. There we go. Brian Harry. Perfect. And you notice when I added him in, it actually auto-completed because Brian was known to the system. You know, he's already a member of a different account. So I could type Brian Harry in and hit tab and it automatically worked. And this is a rich web application. You find yourself using tab and keyboard shortcuts and things like that all the time, and they just work how you would expect. Now, the next thing that we want to do is, now we've added some people, we probably want to go manage our backlog. Who's seen the website before that I'm showing? Who is this news? Wow, this is news to most of you. Okay, we'll show you around a little bit. So I'll come in here, and I'm going to just simply go to, let's add some work to do. So the first thing we want to do is figure out what is wrong with my internet connection. Do a better demo. Have a drink. Fly home to Ireland. There we go. There's some product backlog items. You notice I'm typing all that in. Again, we built all this asynchronously, so it's actually saving those work items, you know. It's doing the saving offline and doing that communication with the server, which for me, for some reason, is being slow, but for everybody else is being fine. So it's taking a while to save these, but I can carry on working while it's doing that. Let's take it. There you go. Oh, nearly saved. Wow, there you go. Saved. So yeah, it's all working asynchronously in the background. So there's me. I can then reorder these. So I'll do a better demo. It's obviously a low priority for me. Figure out the internet connection. Fly home to Ireland and have a drink, probably the top two priorities right now. Not necessarily in that order, because otherwise when I get to my car, Ireland might have tricky problems. So yeah, let's fly home to Ireland, get home, have a drink. Okay, so that's the product backlog. We can then now start assigning these work into sprints. So we'll come here. And, you know, by default, it comes defined with some sprints for you. It's got a current sprint and some future sprints. If we go back to the home page, actually, we can configure your schedule and iterations. So you can say these are the sprints, and you can set some dates. So that this sprint began, you know, this week and finishes the end of next week, and then so on. And you can just go through and set a bunch of dates on your sprints if you want to, and change the names and, you know, define your own sprints. So sprints now have dates, finally. Iterations and area paths now have dates. That's good. Okay. Fantastic. Right, so we'll go back to our product backlog. We're going to assign something to a sprint. So how would you assign something to a sprint? Well, you might, you know, see that little drop-down thing, go move to iteration, move it to a particular sprint. You might forget you're on the web, hit right-click, and oh, look, there's a menu as well. Hit move to iteration, hit sprint. Or you might really forget you're on the web and just take a thing and just drag-drop it on top of a sprint. Like that one, or drag drop it to sprint two, and so on and so forth. So it's a proper web application. You can do, you know, nice, shiny. This web thing might catch on. Okay, so let's go to when it works. Let's go to the current sprint, and we'll see this is the sprint backlog. We currently have two important high priority backlog items, fly home to Ireland, have a drink. So if we do the subtasks for here, we have... give a demo, assign that, well, let's just leave it like that. No, assign it to me. Martin, save and close. And then, let's just think quickly, get taxi. Look, remember I said Control S? You hit Control S, it saves the work item. That's brilliant. I love that. Ryan, sorry. Save and close. Oh, I forgot to assign that. Never mind. And then, of course, assign an important task to Brian. Fire Martin for having demo failure. There we go. Let's assign that to Brian. There we are. Perfect. Save and close. Fabulous. There's a bunch of important tasks for us to do. Now we go in and we have some other things. So we, as well as the task board for doing sprint planning, we've also, the backlog, sorry, for doing sprint planning. We also have the task board. So here we have a bunch of tasks in our to-do pile. Sorry, I've got some here for have a drink as well, which is obviously buy, drink, and pour drink. Here we go, some important tasks. Okay, so we've got the thing there. So give demo, that's currently in progress, so I can drag drop that over to in progress. I might have wanted to do some planning beforehand, so I can click on here and just quickly say roughly how many hours I think it'll take, or I can click on it and type a number in, you know, like 0.15 hours. There we go. So, yep, that's how much time I've got left. Now when I click on here, it'll give me, you know, zero, because it's assuming you're going to go down and like you don't often have a lower increment than, you know, you normally do it in hours increments. If you want to customize your process template so that you don't measure things in hours but in days or T-shirts or unicorns, you can do whatever you want. You can customize it. This is the one that's out of the box. Well, you can customize it on-premise, and then when we label you to customize it in the cloud, you can customize it. Okay? And you might do some planning, like Martin's going to get a taxi, and it's going to take me 3 hours. No, it's going to take me an hour to get, well, probably two in traffic. Brian is going to fire Martin. That's not going to take him long at all. And then buy a drink isn't going to take long. So on and so forth. You can just do a bunch of stuff. When I've given the demo, I can move it over to done. Notice when I move it over to done, this particular process template is configured to automatically zero out the work for me. Done means I've got no work left on it. And I can move the next important task on to get a taxi. Okay. Now, if we look at, you see this chart here? This is the burn down chart. And we can see we're doing product planning. We've added a bunch of tasks. So our burn down for today is currently standing at 4 hours remaining. And this tells you what sort of burn down rate you need. I'm currently above capacity. You know, I need to burn that down to get down to there. You might want to set up your team capacity. How much room your team has to do work so you can come on to the current sprint. Again, and this works from anywhere. You know, this is me doing it on the web. This would work just as easily on the Mac and probably better from a laptop sat over an internet connection than it does when you plug it into the podium. So Brian's a busy chap, so he has only an hour a day to work on our project. However, I've got 5 hours a day to work on our project. And then it shows you your team capacity now, and we've now got a bunch of charts set up here that show us, you know, we've got plenty of room left for work. We're all green. If we added a task in, like if that one suddenly was going to take us 100 hours, then you see Brian gets blown up and he's got too much work and the team's got too much work. So we need to load balance. Okay. Let's just make that 10 to make it a more realistic looking chart. There we go. And then if we go back to the home page, because we've set these things up now, our sprint tells us how we're on track. We've got 13 hours of work remaining, and we've got a total of 36 hours capacity. So that's good. Green. And our burn down chart looks like that because we've just created it. Team favorites. I'll quickly show you that feature. So if I go to, say, work items, I might have a favorite, which is, I might have a work item query, like this product backlog here. That's not particularly interesting. Like, that's interesting to see in the backlog view, but it's not particularly interesting to see as a high-level query. But what is interesting is let's do a new query. So new query, and we'll say work item type is bug, and state is not closed. Okay, yeah. Work item is bug, and state is not closed. We're gonna hit. Save that. Oh, we've just changed something else. It used to be you had to pick a name before you could save. They've changed that yesterday. So no, I didn't, that's a new feature to me. That's not how it worked until I just saw it. There you go. So save as. We'll save it in the team in the shared queries. And we'll say all open bugs. Now, interestingly, I could have added another clause on. I could have, if I wanted to, done and assigned to is equal to at me. And then that's going to show me, let's save it as my bugs, yeah? So now whoever logs into the system and runs that query, it'll tell them how many bugs they have. So we can come in here and we can add a favorite, which will make it a personal favorite. Or we can go here and we can say add to team favorites. So we're going to add my bugs and product, all open bugs to the team favorites. So not only does that make it a favorites view, I didn't click on that. I haven't saved it, that's why. Save query. I haven't saved that one. Right, there we go. Save query. There we go. Add to team favorites. Not only does it make it a team favorite, so it shows up in this option here, it also shows in Visual Studio and in Eclipse and everywhere else that's got the new Team Explorer. It'll show up as a favorite. It's shared between Web, Eclipse, and Visual Studio. And as are your personal favorites as well, obviously. But if we go to the home page, team favorites are shown on the home page in fancy metro style little tile things, you know, and there's my bugs and open bugs are zero, and you can click on those and get a nice, and click, you know, if there was a bug, you can do it. And there you go. You can also do things like, you can go into the source location and look at source code. Currently, there's not much checked into this particular project. But you could do that and add that as a team favorite so you can see the churn. And you can do builds as well. Not a lot there. What I will do is, let's just come out of, is it F11 again? Yeah. Let's just show you. I've got in private mode. I wonder if this is why it messed up. Over here, remember I mentioned Team Explorer Everywhere? My product is actually uses TFS Preview. This is the live view of our thing. Remember I mentioned we don't let you customize your process template? That's because we pushed a change up yesterday that broke our process template because we customized ours in the cloud to see what would happen. And look, that's what happened. We got a shiny red error. So, that's why we don't let you do that right now because things like that would happen until we've done some stuff to make sure that never happens. So, and see there's 4 bugs currently to triage. There's the build. We had a broken build a while ago, which is bad. That's actually because of some network issues on our side, not actually because the build was bad. But, yeah, there were 13 check-ins into the main branch in the past 24 hours. So. That's my team. So that's what a typical team dashboard looks like when that bit's working properly. Okay. There we go. Brilliant. Right. And then one of the things I wanted to show you was just quickly connecting to it from Visual Studio. This is Visual Studio 11, but it's the same from TFS 2010 once you've installed the patch. You basically go to the servers button. You go to the servers button. There we go, right. I've got a bunch of servers there that I talked to. And then you come in here and you add your server URL. So, again, I'm actually being a typical user now. I completely forgot. Oh, no, I'm doing Martin, aren't I? I've already got that one registered. But if I that'll be where I type my account in, but I've actually already got that one on because I'm doing Martin TFS preview. Martin TFS preview. Close. So you just add it in as a URL. Oh, look, you can see all the dev div. There's a dev div source code. There you go. That's the source code for Visual Studio. And then I'm going to go to martin@tfspreview.com. I know what's going wrong there. Sorry. Right, okay. And that's when I get to sign in. And you click through here, and it'll bring up the live ID, and then it'll ask me to log in with my live ID. Martin at woodwardweb.com. Oh. That's my other password. Okay, there we go. And that's logging on, and it'll go away, and I'll be logged in. Okay, so that's how you connect from Visual Studio. And then once you're in, it's just TFS. Yeah, it's exactly the same Team Foundation server you know and love and shows up just as TF Foundation server does today. It's just in the cloud. Right. Super. So I just about got through that alive. Apologies for that. I'm going to figure out what was wrong there and do that again and then edit that into the video so nobody notices. Okay. Please write this down. Tech Days is your invitation code. It's easy to remember. Don't tell anyone else outside this room, okay? That's the rules. You can go and get signed up quickly now. Drop me an email if that's not working for you. And then, yeah, a couple of minutes left. Any outstanding questions? Yes, sir. Okay. There is a, in the, that's not like a mainline supported case, but if there's a in the Tigress integration platform, there is some code to enable you to synchronize between other data sources like SharePoint and TFS, but it's a synchronization that you're always going to have there. You haven't got a single source of the truth. And the problem when you're synchronizing is that you'll have conflicts, that it happens, and you have to manually manage those conflicts and do that. You can do it, but it's not the best case is to get your tasks and have them, you can have them embedded in a portal inside of SharePoint, you know, and display your tasks there and do it that way if you want to. So, and you can do a one-off import of data, obviously, as well from SharePoint and TFS. You're best to try and keep yourself to a single source of the truth. It just makes everybody's life easier. Great question. Yes, sir. The question was, can you access it by web services? Today, TFS, today, well, since 2005, has always been web service based, SOAP web service based. So, you know, web service. We are looking at putting a REST protocol over the front of TFS as well. That's not in the current box. There is a thing called the OData services you can get. We're looking at those and see if we want to add those on to TFS as well to make it easier. We haven't done that yet, but that's certainly something that's pretty high on our backlog. The feedback application works with it, yes. That was enabled two or three releases ago. So, and that's whenever we happen to ship our next preview release, there'll be a new set of bits, like the beta bits, for you to have a try. They'll all work straight against TFS in the cloud. Okay, we're just about out of time. If anyone's got any more questions, please do come up and say hello. But thank you very much for your time. Thanks for coming today, and I'll see you next time in the Netherlands. Thank you.